Thanks for tuning in to Best Show Ever, a podcast presented by the Engler Theater. On today's episode, we'll be talking with Amanda Ray Kane, a killer makeup artist based in Iowa City. We also hear from Kaveh Mostafavi, the founder and CEO of EcoCare Supply. But first, let's get a message about this year's Witching Hour Festival. Witching Hour is back. Meet us downtown November 5th and 6th for a weekend of immersive art and community experiences. We'll be joined by some of the best and brightest of our time, including Tim Story, Lala Lala, Nate Marshall, Tasha, Andre Wright, Lauren Lessing, and many more. Witness the sonic butterfly that is Mobius Strips emerge from its sonic cocoon at the official launch party. Test your synthesizer skills with the Mobius-inspired Moog Workshop. Dance the night away at our Femdex DJ Showcase. Joyful expression abound, all aboard. This year, we're offering weekend passes at standard and student prices, along with a choose-your-own price option. Additionally, we're thrilled to have American Sign Language interpretation available at the majority of our scheduled events. Support this art and get access today at witchinghourfestival.com/passes. Witching Hour is presented by Little Village Magazine and the Englert Theater. Amanda Ray Kane is a makeup artist whose unique style pulls from goth, glam, scene, and kawaii aesthetics. I would strongly, strongly recommend checking out her Instagram before listening to this interview to get a sense for how truly masterful she is when it comes to cosmetics. And you can find her at Amanda_Ray_Kane. Amanda.
Yes.
So excited to have you on.
I'm so excited to be here.
We're podcasting. Who would have thought? You know, we met all that time ago. Who would have thought?
Who would have thunk?
Today. We'd be making a podcast. Here we are. So first question, take us back to the beginning. When did you realize you had a love for makeup?
So actually it started by watching my Nana do her makeup. She was a Southern Belle from Tennessee, and she just had this makeup mirror that she would sit on the dining room table. And I just remember watching her go through all the powders, and I love how it smelled. And she had like her signature look that she did every day. And my mom was never really into makeup, but I had like a really close connection with my Nana. And so, I don't know, I just kind of started getting interested in it through that. And then when I was in middle school, YouTube became like a huge thing. And so from there, I saw all these scene queens and all these like kawaii princess makeup people, and I kind of realized like how big the world of makeup was, and that's what made me want to start doing it myself.
Can you explain like what scene is? Because I feel like I have a sense but not a full understanding of what it is and what draws people to it.
So for me, I don't know, I feel like it kind of has a lot of different definitions for different people, because there are like the scene is just kind of like, it is kind of like an evasive concept, you know, like I feel like people are always like, oh, the scene, the music scene, the music scene. And then there's being seen, which I guess is different. But I would say it's like a lot of fast paced music. It's a lot of electronic music. There's a lot of techno influences. And it was like a very DIY movement. It was kind of post-hardcore influences, but it was just people in their bedrooms making, like, that's why it's called bedroom pop, like early MySpace era scene music. So from that, I guess just also kind of bright colors and neon, animal print, big hair, big liner, that was just all part of the culture. And so it was just kind of trying to emulate those scene queens that I remember seeing on YouTube and seeing at shows. It's just kind of this big community based on coming together, you know, being cutesy is my favorite part of it. You know, that's my favorite part of scene.
I feel like a noob right now because I didn't even realize, I always associate it more with fashion and culture rather than music, but it sounds like kind of the music was really the underlying driver of it, which
is... Yeah, it was kind of like a... it's the music was the big portion of it because that was like the shows were your stage. You didn't wear this to school because like you would get probably beat up, but you got to put on this like persona when you went to a show. You got to be whoever you wanted when you went to a show. And like you would see all these people that you know and kind of just like compare like what your looks are. And it was just like a whole thing. I miss it. I miss high school.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a cool way of putting that. Yeah, you get to be this persona in this like kind of safe space that happens to be a music concert. Do you see similarities between scene and maybe the drag world? Because we were just talking about how you have several friends who do drag, and I feel like I can kind of see some similarities there.
Definitely, yeah. My favorite part of when I go out in like full like crazy makeup is talking to all the drag queens who are working that night, because they're all like, oh my god, and we're just like comparing looks because there's just so much crossover between like I feel like scene and like campy type drag and art, where it's just based on that like that neon bright bold color, like trying to be shocking. Everything's like exaggerated. You have the exaggerated liner, the exaggerated hair, the exaggerated eyebrows. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of crossover there. And one of my best friends, Raquel, she's a self-proclaimed scene queen. So
I can see that for sure. I can definitely see that. Yeah, every time I go to a drag show, I feel like, you know, this is just true of a lot of things, but when you have people who are so willing to go to the extreme of being who they are, or even taking it a step further and being a persona of who they are, or an ego of who they are, I just always walk away so inspired and thinking of like, okay, what are even just little ways that I can tap further into who I am? Even if it's just like wearing eyeshadow the next day. Literally the smallest things for people who aren't doing this all the time feel like such an act of bravery.
Yeah, definitely.
To just switch up personal style just a teeny bit.
Yeah, and also I recently found out that I am autistic. So that's been interesting to navigate. But I found as I was talking to my doctor that one of the reasons why I gravitated towards makeup at such an early age is because I was kind of using it as a mask. But a lot of people take that in a negative way, but I think there's a lot of power in that, being able to put on a mask and then feel confident. And especially if it's something that you're teaching yourself, like you're teaching yourself a skill that's making your life easier, that's making it better, like you're making you feel more confident. It's making you view the world in a different way because you view yourself in a different way. And even something as simple as like, I have a really hard time making eye contact with people. And I have a really hard time with, I just turn beet red if I make eye contact with people. And then I found like, oh, like if I have like a full face of makeup on, like I can carry on like a full conversation with somebody and feel confident at the end of it. And so that was also something that kind of pulled me towards it. And I don't know, I think that's really powerful, just being able to pick a label of like, who do I want to be today? Like, how do I want the world to see me? Like, I get to choose that.
That is so cool. And to be conscious of that too, because so many of us meet every day. I just get ready in the morning. I just throw on sort of the same stuff. And I always notice a difference when I take the time to think about, how do I want to feel today? How do I want to look today? How do I want to express myself? And that kind of speaks to also, you know, fashion and style as an art form, how powerful it is because it's so connected to yourself and your body. Like you could paint something and put it up somewhere and like walk away from it, but like painting your face, you are that art expression. When you're doing someone else's makeup, what's kind of going through your mind as you're like styling someone else?
So the biggest thing for me is I want the person whose makeup I'm doing to feel hot. Like I just want them to feel beautiful And I know that kind of seems like a given, but there's just like a ton of little questions that you can ask, like, do you like this contour? Or like, which color palette do you like? Or just showing them like as many reference photos as I can. So like for me, the most important step is like before it even starts, because I want to make sure that they walk away feeling better about themselves. I also really like to offer for like any of my queer friends, if they want like more feminine looks, not quite sure how to do it, like I'm always willing to teach people. I'm always willing to do it for an event. I just love doing people's makeup.
Yeah, it's such an empowering thing to help someone else feel beautiful or see themselves as beautiful.
Yeah, we go all out when we do makeup at my house. Like I did my friend's Nico's makeup, and then we did like a full outfit, full photo shoot afterwards. That's usually what I do when I do makeup with people, because yeah, like I want them to walk away with something that they can keep too, because that's the bittersweet thing about makeup, is that it's so temporary, but that's also the beautiful thing about it, is it's kind of fleeting and you can do something different every day.
How would you like to see your future with makeup pan out?
I have been throwing around the idea of going to school for aesthetics, which is would make me a licensed makeup artist. I just love working in customer service, and I love talking to people. I love doing makeup. And so I feel like it's kind of the natural next step is getting into like the hospitality industry, and just kind of seeing where I could take my makeup skills from here and get into some master classes. But for now, I'm just, like I said, community building, trying to teach people what I can and learn what I can from people.
Stunning. Well, everyone listening, you should 100% check out Amanda's Instagram. It'll rock your world. It's so truly an art form. And Amanda, thank you so much again for sharing a little of your expertise with us today.
Of course, it's been an honor.
We'll be right back in conversation with Kaveh Mostafavi, founder of EcoCare Supply, after a quick word from our development director, Katie Roche.
Did you know that you could be promoting your business, organization, or event to Best Show Ever podcast listeners by placing an ad here on the show? Sponsoring Best Show Ever or other Englert programming ties your brand to a local legacy, the Englert Theater. And your support of the Englert now means more than ever before. In 2020, we experienced significant revenue shortfall brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. Through this financially tumultuous time, we're producing new digital productions, including this podcast, our Stages concert series, and Witching Hour Festival, all to inspire positive community growth through the arts. Packages range from $100 on up. Our investment in the arts community is only possible with support from sponsors like you. And art supporters are known for supporting those that support the arts. Visit englert.org/sponsorship for all of the information about how to advertise. I mean, you're listening right now. Place your ad here, englert.org/sponsorship.
Kaveh Mostafavi began his career as a bankruptcy attorney during the financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. But along the way, he uncovered his own affinity for business. While franchising a couple of poncheros with his brother, Kaveh discovered a unique need for sustainable and cost-effective janitorial services. EcoCare, which he founded, has a comprehensive structure selling earth-friendly janitorial, sanitary, and restaurant supplies, providing the janitorial staff to utilize the supplies, and then composting the waste created in the process. Kaveh, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you so much for jumping on our sweet little podcast today.
Thanks for having me. It's nice meeting you as well.
So I, of course, want to talk about EcoCare. But before we get there, I want to ask you about your history as an attorney. And one of your major focuses was helping bankruptcy clients manage their debts. What was the transition or turning point for you moving away from this attorney world more into the business world?
The driving factor was my mental health. You know, I went to law school because after undergraduate, I was like, I don't want to go in the real world. I don't want to work a 9-to-5 behind a cubicle. Like, that's just not who I am. So I was like, you know, my parents were like, well, you like to talk and argue, so why don't you take, you know, the LSAT, see how you do. I did. I got a good enough score, got into Drake, you know. And so I wasn't passionate about law, but I knew in law it will teach me things that kind of I can carry with me forever on ways to protect myself in any capacity, because I was really interested in real estate. And so I was like, well, at least I can use it for that, you know. So I went to law school and it was a blast. You know, it was kind of like, it was super fun. A lot of work, not very fun work. But the social aspect of it was fun. And then I actually moved to Arizona to take the bar and practice there. So, you know, it was kind of my out to leave the Midwest and go explore a little bit. So for all those reasons, it was fantastic. But then I got into the actual day-to-day practice of it, and I was like, wow, this is, I'm already kind of like a hyper high, you know, not high strung, but, you know, kind of a anxious worrier type. And with law, it's like, that's all you do is focus on the negative, the bad, the trouble, you know, people's anxieties, and granted in bankruptcy, people's like anguish, you know? And it took a toll after 6.5 years. I was like, wow, I am mentally spent, emotionally just void. And ironically, my brother and I, because we loved Ponchero so much, we franchised it for Arizona. So we opened up to Poncheros down there. So while I was practicing law, I was kind of like overseeing these two Poncheros, and which was super fun. I loved it. And that kind of introduced me more into the entrepreneurial world. And then the aha moment was like sitting there. I remember at lunch one day, I was having a burrito and I was just like head down. I was like, oh God, I am just like so in a bad mental place, you know? And I just looked up and I was watching a group of kids eat, because it was right outside ASU, so there was ASU students. And they were eating these burritos, but I noticed like they had a stack of napkins on their table that was like 6 inches high. And I was like, that's a lot of napkins. And they used, the whole table used like 3 or 4, and that whole stack just went in the trash. So I was like, man, I wonder, you know, like we're just burning money. So I was like, how can I limit the use of that paper? So I found a dispenser from this manufacturer out of, they had North American manufacturing, but they're a European brand. And they were like, all about sustainability. They planted trees. It was a forestry company essentially that had paper mills that made toilet paper, paper towels, napkins. And, you know, they made a dispenser that only dispensed one at a time. So you couldn't grab a whole stack. And so called them up, got their dispensers, brought their products in. It was all 100% recycled paper. So, you know, we became more sustainable. And sure enough, people started using less napkins. Less paper towels in the bathroom, and then we used less paper towels in the kitchen. So I was like, oh, that's great. And then it was like, oh man, well, what if I started a company that offered these more sustainable products to businesses? Because I knew everyone uses paper towels, napkins, toilet paper, you know, and then from there it turned into, you know, well, we use a lot of plastic and foam. How can we get rid of that? And so I found companies that made products out of plant waste, basically. And those products, once we used them and threw them away, they decomposed in 3 months. So I was like, perfect. We'll get rid of our plastics and foams and we'll bring in these compostable products. And then it was, okay, now this is a business. This is a business idea where we can go. And what EcoCare is now is we audit the consumables that any entity uses. It can be a school, it can be a large employer, it can be a restaurant, or it can be a city building. And we'll basically do a full audit of all the products they use. Mainly stuff in their bathrooms, stuff they clean with, and stuff in kitchens and break rooms and things like that, because those are products that on a daily basis are used and discarded. So we remove plastics and foams, replace them with compostable products. We remove toxic cleaners and chemicals and replace them with probiotic cleaning agents. And then on the back end, we acquired a company called the Compost Ninja. And the Compost Ninja, we implement an indoor and outdoor waste collection system so we can collect food and compostable waste and paper waste from the bathroom, things like that. And we compost all of that waste. So we essentially divert a large portion of a company's waste away from the landfill, and it decomposes in 3 months, goes through an anaerobic digestion outdoor process, and it becomes a fertilizer at the end of its process. So operationally, we're at the supply chain for the company. And now as we've grown, because people have loved our products and our service, we've added a, what we call it, green janitorial cleaning portion, where we actually have people go in and clean the space. Our cleaners then help with the management of the supply chain. So, you know, a client will set pars of every product, whether it's toilet paper, a cleaner, a cup, a trash bag, a glove, and our crews will go in, check the inventory, place the or create the orders, our supply teams process the orders, deliver the product, and then our janitorial crews also then help with the diversion so we get the right compostable cup in the compost pile while we get the chip bag in the garbage and help with the diversion. And then our Compost Ninja hauls the compost away. And that's the overall operation and model of EcoCare and the Compost Ninja.
I feel like we're on Shark Tank right now.
I've had so many people tell me that, you know, I should go on there, but you know, this is something where we're still building it, you know, and there's other things that we're doing. So it's still being built, you know, and I want to keep it an Iowa thing. You know, I don't want to bring too many outside investors and all that stuff in it. This is an Iowa. And that was the longest winded answer to your simple question.
I mean, you can tell that you're very passionate about the business down to the very science of the product cleaners, which is like what you want out of a business owner. And yeah. I listened to a podcast where you talk a little bit about the business and like your philosophy on leadership. And I really enjoyed it because I feel like the connotation of CEO is big, rich, top dog, lots of power and influence. And you seem like a pretty down to earth guy.
I've cleaned toilets. Everyone at EcoCare, I have about 22, 23 employees, knows. I mean, they all have my number. They can call me anytime. I don't believe in that hierarchy.
And everyone makes a living wage.
Absolutely. Which is, yeah. So very important to me. Yeah. And you know, these are industries where it's like cleaners, delivery drivers, warehouse people, you know, and bless them, they work their butts off. And so I absolutely don't mind making less so that they make more, you know, and our clients believe in that as well. So, you know, that's a philosophy that will always be part of EcoCare. I really want to merge the sustainable drive and mission that we have with the social mission, which is these people day in and day out work all throughout the pandemic. Places were being cleaned, products were being delivered, warehouses were being stocked, you know, and my teams were working. So they deserve an equal share of everything that's going on.
Yeah. It's that triple bottom line sort of take on things where the profit should have as much importance as the social impact and the environmental impact, which seem to be all things that you are keeping an eye on. Kudos. Okay, so for the last portion of this podcast, I have to ask you about your favorite live show experience in Iowa City.
Oh man, I grew up in Iowa City, so there's so many. But I got to give a shout out to my friend Mark Nolte and his group City Park. Earlier this summer, there was that downtown festival. I forgot which one, but it was such a great vibe, and it was a beautiful day. And I, you know, Mark has a great voice, and they just kind of rocked out.
Mark Nolte has a band.
Yeah.
How did I not know this?
City Park. He's the lead singer of City Park.
What kind of music is it?
It's like folky kind of country. You have to hear it. And once you hear him, you're like, wow, that's Mark Nolte. He's got a good voice.
I am so shocked. Like Mark Nolte of Mark and Leslie Nolte.
Yes.
Wow. And that was this year?
That was like in, earlier this summer.
Wow. Yeah. That's like this summer, some of the programming, especially, yeah, that outdoor programming was a breath of fresh air. Summer of the Arts, the Friday Night Concert Series, the Jazz Fest, like going out with a bunch of people and feeling safe and watching live music for the first time in a year.
Seriously.
Well, Kaveh, thank you so much again for coming on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Awesome.
It's been a joy.
Thank you for having me. I love talking about this stuff and love the Engler and everything you're doing. So very nice meeting you.
Our song of the week is called Red Maple, and it's a collaboration between Iowa City musicians Jarrett Purdy and Dan Padley. The song comes from the EP titled October Songs, which was released earlier this week. October Song serves as a proof of concept for a new project the two are working on called Ecotones, which draws compositional inspiration and audio samples from the nature of Iowa. Serving the Iowa City area, Martin Construction was voted Best Home Improvement Company by Little Village in 2019 and 2020. Martin Construction is here to improve your home and lifestyle, incorporating the best design, products, workmanship, service, and trade partners, and with the lowest impact on your personal and global environment. Visit them online at andrewmartinconstruction.com. Martin Construction, member of the Greater Iowa City Home Builders Association and Johnson County Affordable Housing Coalition. Support for this podcast comes from Friends of the Englert. To learn more, visit englert.org/friends. Ongoing support provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Iowa Arts Council, a division of the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the United States Regional Arts Resilience Fund. Phase 1 is an initiative of Arts Midwest and its peer United States Regional Arts Organizations, made possible by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation.